Hello and welcome to In Conversation With, a podcast from The Lancet Oncology. It's April 2023 and my name is Cheryl Reeves. This month I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Mark Lithgow from Imperial College London, UK, who's going to talk to us today about his review entitled From the European Medicines Agency to Project Orbis, New Activities and Challenges to Facilitate UK Oncology Drug Approval Following Brexit, published in our April issue. Dr. Lithgow, thank you for joining me today. The departure from the EU has necessitated substantial healthcare reform in the UK. Can you summarise the changes that have had to be made, what new collaborations have been formed, and how they work to bring about new oncology drug approvals?
Many thanks for asking me to sort of come and talk about my paper. So, absolutely. So, really, following the Brexit referendum in 2016, the UK formally left the European Union in early 2020. And after a sort of short transition period, withdrew from participating European Union institutions, and most notably the European Medicines Agency in 2021. And this really transformed the MHRA into the UK's standalone medicine and medical device regulator, with the exception of Northern Ireland. To replace European Union pharmaceutical law, the UK has enacted the Medicines and Medical Device Act to regulate human medicines, veterinary medicines, and medical devices. MMD has really been a crucial step towards forging an independent regulatory landscape and new pharmaceutical policies following Brexit. The UK government following Brexit has also been very focused on making the UK an attractive place for both commercial and non-commercial drug developers. And this is central to the vision to really transform the UK into a global life sciences superpower, which is something that's been noted in consistent UK government policy documents. The UK has been focused on forging greater international collaboration beyond the European Union, something which was actually further outlined in the spring budget just a few days ago by the UK Chancellor, who again sort of noted the desire to accelerate medicine review, approval and access. New collaboration, including participation in programmes such as the United States Food and Drug Administration, FDA-led collaborative review programme, Project Orbis, which is specific for new oncology drug approvals. And more broadly, the UK has joined the Access Consortium, a collaborative review programme of other medium-sized regulators such as Health Canada, which can review new medicines in any therapy area. The MHRA has also put in place reliance routes with the European Medicines Agency to allow continued collaboration in the approval of new medicines, which has also been recently extended for a further year due to the success of this pathway. The MHRA has also developed new regulatory review frameworks, which could offer the potential for faster drug approval in the UK, such as the Innovative Licensing and Access Pathway, or the ILAP, and the first oncology drug, belzutifan, was approved via this pathway last year. This pathway also shows some overlap with collaborative programs such as Project Orbis, showing the potential synergy of these different pathways. Now, oncology is the biggest area for global drug development over the past decade. For example, in 2021, more new oncology therapies were approved in Europe and the US than the next four largest therapy areas combined. Really, this shows the huge importance of this area for drug developers. Therefore, to really outline the new MHRA post-Brexit policies, oncology is really seen as a key area for showcasing drug development and investment from pharmaceutical companies in the UK.
Thank you. Would you say there is a dominant collaborative route for new cancer drug approvals in the UK?
Absolutely. So I think one of the first steps that was really taken by the MHRA following the departure from the European Medicines Agency was to join both the Project Orbis and the Access Consortium. Now, we actually performed an analysis of Project Orbis in the first sort of year of operation. So Project Orbis is an oncology-specific program which is led by the US FDA with other global partners from Australia, Canada, Singapore, Switzerland, Brazil and Israel to review new oncology marketing authorization applications collaboratively. Myself and the senior author, Professor Richard Sullivan, published an article in The Lancet Oncology a few months ago, which really looked at the UK experience in the first year of participation in Project Orbis. And we showed that during 2021, this programme supported six new oncology market authorisations, predominantly in non-small cell lung cancer, but also breast cancer. If you compare this to the Access Consortium in the first year of operation, there was actually no oncology drugs approved by this pathway, showing potentially the sort of most dominant route is probably likely to be sort of Project Orbis. It's also important to note that all the drugs that were approved by Project Orbis were actually approved in the UK before they received European Medicines Agency approval. And this was by a median of around about sort of 99 days, showing how the UK is potentially accessing new oncology approvals earlier than sort of our European counterparts.
So has the UK been successful then in establishing itself as an attractive market for new drug development since Brexit? Is the UK's access to new cancer drugs the same, better or worse, do you think, since Brexit?
Yeah, I think that's a really important question, but it's quite a sort of difficult question to sort of answer fully. The MHRA has undoubtedly put in reliance routes with the European Medicines Agency to help the Brexit transition, increase collaboration with new partners, particularly beyond the European Union, and developed its own accelerated review programs, such as the ILAP program. During 2022, the UK actually approved 11 novel cancer medicines, which actually compares very favourably with both the European Medicines Agency and the Food and Drug Administration, who approved 12 each. The first drug, belzutifan, was approved utilising the new innovative licensing and access pathway, the ILAP, which seeks to allow the MHRA to work with drug developers at an early stage of development to accelerate market access. This pathway has been hugely popular, with the MHRA reporting that 164 applications for this programme have been received thus far. And so it's likely to become an increasingly important framework for drug development in the UK. However, there are signs that the UK may not be being prioritised by pharmaceutical companies particularly. For example, if we look at novel immune checkpoint inhibitors licensed during 2020, which target LAG-3, there have been approvals in both the US and Europe, but none in the UK for metastatic melanoma. The US and the EU actually dominate the global pharmaceutical market, accounting for 46% and 25% respectively of total medicine expenditure. In comparison, the UK accounts for just 2.4% of this market, meaning that other higher revenue markets could easily be prioritised by drug developers. So I do think there are steps needed to ensure the UK maintains market access to innovative cancer drugs. And further collaboration with the EMA and the FDA would probably seem as the most appropriate way forwards for this.
Is that one of the main challenges, do you think, or what are the other substantial challenges in terms of ensuring appropriate access to new oncology drugs for patients with cancer?
So I think it's important to note that if a new oncology drug gains a UK regulatory approval by the MHRA, this is really insufficient alone to ensure that there is patient access. Mm. But the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence, or NICE, is responsible for appraising the cost effectiveness of new medicines to allow access through the NHS in England. In our review of the first year of Project Orbis operations, we found that the delay between UK regulatory approval and NICE opinion for drugs reviewed by Project Orbis was around about sort of 262 days after market authorisation. Now, this is well above the 90-day target that NICE actually sets for reviewing drugs following market authorisation, showing that faster regulatory review is not the only factor in determining patient access. Though it is important to note that some drugs, but not all of them, were actually available by early access schemes before this. Mm. One feature of sort of faster regulatory review is potentially less data and less information to perform effective health technology assessments. It is possible that increased regulatory speed is affecting the ability of this process. One potential way to mitigate this would be for new drug approvals, which utilise the innovative licensing and access pathway, which actually facilitates earlier input from key stakeholders such as NICE and also patient groups, notably as well. And this could feasibly allow regulatory approval to be more closely aligned with NICE determinations to reduce delays in patient access. However, notably, the first oncology drug, belzutifan, to be reviewed by this pathway is still, at this time, awaiting sort of NICE determination, suggesting that further work is needed here.
Thank you. Can you elaborate on some of the challenges faced by the UK because of the divergence in clinical trial harmonisation between the UK and the EU? And particularly, what are your thoughts on the new Northern Ireland Protocol and possible future UK associations with Horizon Europe and Euratom?
Absolutely. So I think, you know, fundamentally leaving the infrastructure of the European Union and also the European Medicines Agency has affected both drug development and clinical trials in the UK. The MHRA has fortunately been able to rapidly rejoin sort of key international partnerships. For example, the International Council on the Harmonisation of Technical Requirements for Registration of Pharmaceuticals for Human Use, and also notably the Medical Device Innovation Consortium, to resume its role in setting global standards for both medicine and medical device regulation and safety, which is really key to sort of continuing global oncology trials in the UK. However, both the European Union and the UK have implemented new clinical trial regulations. New European Union regulations focus on synchronising conduct and reporting across all member countries, with the aim really of facilitating more pan-European trials, with updates now provided to the new European Union Clinical Trial Registry, which unfortunately the UK does not have access to currently. A recent report by the Association of the British Pharmaceutical Industry has shown that since Brexit referendum in 2016, the number of industry clinical trials initiated in the UK has actually fallen by 41% between 2017 and 2021. Pharmaceutical companies are increasingly placing their trials in other countries. This will disproportionately affect oncology trials, as this is the leading area for global clinical trials. Last month, Lord O'Shaughnessy has been appointed to conduct an independent review into the UK commercial clinical trial landscape. So I think this report will be hugely important in assessing these questions. But I think the uncertainty around the UK-EU partnerships, such as Horizon Europe, is having huge implications in both oncology research and clinical trials, and also well beyond this.
And finally, can you describe some of the challenges which may still lie ahead for the UK?
Absolutely. So I think the EU and the European Medicines Agency have been really integral partners in the development and approval of new UK oncology drugs for almost three decades. So continued alignment through reliance routes is continuing this relationship in some areas, and it's still proving significant for new oncology approvals. I think the extension of this scheme was highly desirable, and this is something that the UK government has now put in place. But I think going beyond that, I think there are question marks to remain to the if this pathway is going to be something that both drug developers and also the MHRA can rely on going into the future. With the global oncology market expected to double in size by 2030, with actually the fastest growth predicted in Europe, the UK should really look to forge stronger collaborative links with the European Medicines Agency, ensuring the UK does not become a late launch or a no launch at all for prospective cancer drug developers. And this is really a key point that's been echoed by the Association of the British Pharmaceutical Industry. Beyond this, in early February, the UK government announced a proposed bespoke cancer plan for England will be abandoned in favour of a shorter integrated five-year major condition strategy, which is really amalgamating cancer care with other major health issues, including stroke, diabetes, mental health and dementia. This transition away from a dedicated national cancer control plan is concerning to both oncologists and patient groups and is contrary to global accepted standards set by the World Health Organization. Further, this leaves England as one of the few countries and the only home nation in the UK without such a plan. And this could be hugely significant for new oncology drug development in the UK.
Thank you so much, Dr. Lithgow. It has been a real pleasure chatting with you today. Thank you for listening to this episode of In Conversation With. Remember, the full article is now available online on the Lancet Oncology website, and you can subscribe to In Conversation with the Lancet Oncology wherever you usually listen to your podcasts.